And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, welcome to a Friday game day edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown here with you. Steve Tasker will be joining us momentarily from Charlotte, where he'll be broadcasting the game tonight with Andrew Catalan on the television side. And he'll be bringing you all the action. Traveled down there with the team yesterday. And he'll be joining us in just a moment as we're going through just a couple of final technical hurdles to get connected with him down in Charlotte. Obviously, most of you in our viewing and listening audience are aware of the civil suit that has been filed against Bills punter Matt Araiza and two other San Diego State football players alleging that they were involved in a gang rape of a then 17-year-old woman at an off-campus home last October. Criminal charges in the case yet to be filed. There's no knowledge as to whether the investigation will result in criminal charges, but the civil case is moving forward. Attorneys for both sides have commented publicly on the case, so it's clear that the facts in this case are going to be debated by both sides. The allegations are ugly. There's no debating that. The Bills did issue a statement late yesterday where they said the following. We were recently made aware of a civil complaint involving Matt from October 2021. Due to the serious nature of the complaint, we conducted a thorough examination of this matter. As this is an ongoing civil legal case, we will have no other comment at this point. And truthfully, that's where Steve and I are going to leave it too. When the Bills have further comment on this issue, we will bring it to you. As far as decisions and all that other stuff, out of my hands, out of Steve's hands, so we're going to leave it there. We know what's been reported to this point. We're going to have to wait and see what happens from here. We do know that Matt Araiza made the trip with the team. What happens from here on out, we're just going to have to play the wait-and-see game. I realize that's probably not going to satisfy all of you out there in the listening audience, but that's the route we have to take right now because that's all we know at this point in time. As I said, Steve's going to be joining us in just a second. He's down in Charlotte trying to get connected with us to get the show underway. As you know, it is a Fan Friday mailbag edition of the show, as it is every Friday. So we'll be taking your questions on the team as we are 1, 2, 3, 4 days away from the final cutdown of the roster to 53. Currently sits at 80. So decisions to be made, and head coach Sean McDermott said it in no uncertain terms, and I'll be talking to Steve about this a little bit more, but there are still roles that can be had on this roster. I think more than anything, chiefly on the special team side of the ledger. So if a player can rise up tonight and make a difference on special teams, they may in fact carve out themselves a niche on the 53-man roster. So we'll have to see where that goes. NFL news and notes around the league, and there is several things to discuss. Mitchell Trubisky, former Bills backup quarterback, is going to start the Steelers' final preseason game, which means that he still is the number one quarterback on their roster. Rookie Kenny Pickett, their first-round pick, has reportedly been closing the gap on Mitchie Biscuits, but in the final preseason game, their performances figure to factor into what will be the final decision, so we'll have to see how both do this weekend. Reporters in New York are saying it's looking more and more likely that Joe Flacco will be the Jets' week one starter. That's because Zach Wilson, who had his knee scoped late last week on the heels of his injury in the preseason game last week, is nowhere near being cleared to play. If that proves to be the case, Joe Flacco will be yet another quarterback facing his former team. We know that Russell Wilson is going to be playing against the Seahawks in week one on Monday Night Football, as he is now quarterback of the Denver Broncos. We know that Baker Mayfield is the starting quarterback in Carolina, and he is going to be playing against the Cleveland Browns, his former team, in week one. The Jets play the Ravens in week one in New Jersey. So if Flacco is, in fact, the starter for the Jets come 13 days from now, or a little over 2 weeks from now, he'll be playing his former team as well. There is other news concerning the Jets. Their former second-round pick in the 2020 draft, Denzel Mims, formally requested a trade from the club yesterday. He's been buried deep on the depth chart. His agent actually released a statement. Ron Slavin said, quote, "It's just time. Denzel tried in good faith, but it's clear he does not have a future with the Jets. Denzel vowed to come back better than ever this season, worked extremely hard in the offseason to make that happen. Still, he has been given no opportunities with the starting offense to get in a groove with them. We feel at this point a trade is our only option since the Jets have told us repeatedly they will not release him. Joe Douglas, the GM of the Jets, has always done right by Denzel. We trust he will do everything in his power to find another team where Denzel can be a contributor." Mims is an interesting case. We've seen a lot of high Jets draft choices fail in the New York system before. He had injury issues his rookie year, missed most of his rookie season, tried to crack the lineup last year, could not, and here he is again, unable to crack the lineup. The Jets have made high wide receiver draft choices since Mims in 2020. In round two in the 2021 draft, they selected Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. He is slated to be one of their top two receivers and their primary option in the slot, which is one of the reasons why they did not re-sign Jamison Crowder, who entered free agency and, of course, signed with the Bills. And then this past year, in round one, one of their three first-round draft picks was Ohio State wide receiver Garrett Wilson. So no room for Mims. Clearly in the top five, top six receivers, he's requested a trade. It looks like the Jets are going to see what they can do to accommodate him. They're not just going to give him away for a song. So we'll have to keep our ear to the ground on that to see where Denzel Mims ends up for the 2022 season. NFL Defensive Player of the Year Aaron Donald went a little nuts during a joint practice between the Rams and the Bengals yesterday. There were a couple of minor scraps through the course of that joint practice because I saw people live tweeting from that practice session, and people were tweeting stuff like, oh, another minor scrap here, tensions are rising, and then it boiled over when Donald had ripped off the helmet of a Bengals player and began swinging it around like a weapon, striking two different players in the melee. Fortunately, one of them had his helmet still on. Since this happened in a practice, though, the NFL is not in a position to enact punitive discipline. It's in the hands of the team on whether to impose discipline, and I think we can all agree that the LA Rams are not going to impose any kind of significant discipline against Aaron Donald. But I have to say, I cannot remember a preseason in which there were this many issues during joint practices between two teams. Steve and I were talking about what happened last week between the Patriots and Panthers. It happened over the course of 2 days. And on day two, it happened on the first snap of teamwork in the joint scrimmages. So two straight days of stupidity up there in New England. So there have been others as well. But yesterday was the capper with Aaron Donald, a high-profile player, at the center of it. So I don't know. I'd love to ask Steve why he thinks it's gotten so bad, because it's gotten bad. This is the worst I've ever seen it in a preseason setting. So makes me wonder if there are going to be fewer joint practices scheduled next year. Already without a pass rusher and top pick Kayvon Thibodeau, who's out for a couple of weeks with a sprained MCL, the Giants also lost pass rusher Azeez Ojulari to a calf injury in practice yesterday. Early word is they anticipate it's not severe, so they're hoping it's only a week or two that Azeez Ojulari is out. He's their former top pick last year. So here they are again, and now they're without two of their top young pass rushers, with Thibodeau out with the sprained MCL, and now Ojulari out with a calf injury. Other interesting comment made by Giants head coach Brian Daboll in his press conference yesterday. Among the questions he was asked about what he thought about the depth he felt he had at the tight end position on his roster. Daboll said, quote, "We don't have much." So whoever the Bills may or may not move off their roster at the tight end position, I think it's just about a lock that the Giants will be putting in a waiver claim for that player, almost no matter who it is. because they have zero depth at the tight end position right now. They're going to be on the hunt and scanning the waiver wire to see who they might be able to pick up and add to their roster. And if they can add a Buffalo Bills player who probably would know Brian Daboll's offensive system with the Giants inside and out, would be a very quick waiver claim entered to the league. Preseason action last night, the 49ers got shut out by the Texans 17-0. Trey Lance, after the game, called it an ugly performance by their offense. For what it's worth, he was 7 of 11 for 49 yards in the game. Got sacked also on one occasion. In the other preseason game last night, the Chiefs beat the Packers. Neither Patrick Mahomes nor Aaron Rodgers played in the game. I don't know if people saw this, but Mahomes kind of ran out on the field to start the game. And in a tribute to the late Len Dawson, former Chiefs quarterback who passed at the age, I think he was in his 80s, 87 years old, I believe, just passed this week. In a tribute to him, they had the Chiefs line up in what's called a choir huddle. That's not the conventional circle huddle. It's basically they're lined up like a choir, one row in front of the other, with the guys in the front with their hands on their knees, and everybody can hear the play call. That's how Len Dawson used to set up his huddle. So it was kind of a cool tribute by Patrick Mahomes yesterday to the late Len Dawson, former quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's NFL news and notes as it stands. As we get ready for tonight's game, I'm interested to see, because we heard Coach McDermott say this at his last press conference here in Buffalo before the team left for Charlotte yesterday. Basically, what Coach McDermott said was most starters will not play. Now, that's going to include people like Josh Allen. It'll even include Dawson Knox, who has not yet played in the preseason and won't when all is said and done. And the one thing that Coach McDermott threw in at the end was that, hey, most starters won't play. So when I asked him, hey, Dawson Knox is a unique situation. Might he see some action after missing last week's preseason game because he had to be with his family for the tragic passing of his younger brother? And then in the week prior, none of the starters played. And he said, well, no, and the reason he will not play in this preseason game is because Dawson Knox has practiced an awful lot. As a matter of fact, outside of being away with his family to attend to, you know, his younger brother's funeral, wake, et cetera, and memorial service, he had not missed a practice in training camp. He had practiced every single day and fortunately did not get nicked up in any way, shape, or form. And because of that, Coach McDermott felt comfortable that he didn't need to play in this final preseason game either. Now, he did say the starters that they will consider playing tonight are guys that have not practiced a lot. And I think a primary candidate that falls into that category is Spencer Brown. As we know, coming off back surgery in the offseason, he has been brought along very slowly. He's been getting more and more time on the field in the latter stages of training camp at St. John Fisher. And then when they got back here to One Bills Drive, he started getting more and more and more reps. David Quessenberry, the veteran offensive lineman who started the entire year at right tackle last year for the Titans, has been in there in his absence, but Brown has been rotating in more and more. So I wonder, is that a candidate and a guy that may start tonight, one of the few starters that we may see on the field tonight? That's the question that I have, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do. And, you know, where he is at, how he performs, how much rust he can knock off, I think will be important in terms of the player that starts at right tackle in week one. Because I got to tell you, Quessenberry has been pretty effective from the time he has been on the field with this club in the preseason. So I think he's at least made the offensive staff comfortable in the fact that, hey, if Spencer Brown plays tonight and if his performance isn't where they feel it should be and he can't make up the ground necessary to justify putting him in the starting lineup week one against the LA Rams, David Quessenberry is a heck of a fallback option. So I don't think it's a crisis status. It's a crisis state at right tackle in any way, shape, or form. It is an interesting development, and I think if Spencer Brown plays tonight, he's someone we should keep a close eye on, knowing that he hasn't had a a lot of time on the practice field, nor in the preseason. Other notes that I kind of jotted down for myself here concerning tonight's preseason game involves Isaiah Hodgins. I think he's a player that's squarely on the bubble right now. He played on almost all the special teams units last week as the staff is clearly trying to give him every opportunity to prove I can make progress on special teams and be a contributor there. So if you want to make me the sixth receiver on the roster, I know I'm probably not going to be getting a lot of run on offense, but I can give you something on special teams. He admits he's trying to do as much as he can to be on the fast track in that area of his game. Tonight could be very big for him, as I believe it's down to basically him and Jay Kumerow for that sixth and final wide receiver spot on the 53-man roster. Then you've got two guys in the rookie corners, Christian Benford and Kyrie Elumo, I think are going to get a ton of time tonight. And those two guys are, in a way, battling each other, if you think about it, for the third corner spot. If you still count Tre'Davious White in the equation, he's CB1. Dane Jackson is CB2. And then you have Kyrie Elam and Christian Benford battling out for the third corner spot. And yes, I believe it is that close. Because what we've seen through the course of training camp, and even in the preseason games, is a rotation where Kyrie Elam will come on, play a snap or two, and then Christian Benford will sub him out and come in and play as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if that continues tonight, unless they're lined up opposite each other on the field at the same time, which could very well happen as well if Dane Jackson doesn't play tonight, and I think that's a distinct possibility. So that's kind of where we're at with that. It's a neck-and-neck race there, and while I think Kyrie Elam unquestionably has superior physical skills, Benford has made it a race. And Steve is with us now. It's good to see you, Steve.
User error on my part trying to get this thing up and running. I appreciate your patience, but you're right. The two young corners are kind of in competition with each other. I don't think there's any question both of them make the 53, but they're going to get a lot of time tonight. And as this game goes, we asked Sean McDermott, and you probably mentioned this, that there's going to be some guys that have to make this team on special teams. And one of the things he mentioned was interesting to me was some of these guys, these young guys in particular, think that it's already been set in stone. You know, it's because they're not going to be a better tight end than another guy, or a better running back, or a better defensive back, or a better linebacker, or a better what have you, that they're done. They're not going to make the team. And they kind of give up, not knowing that if they go out and make a couple of special teams tackles or do what they're supposed to do, or match up really well in their protection, whatever, on punt coverage, kickoff return, that they go out there and have a really good game in that aspect, they can make the 53. They just don't believe it. They think it's already been decided, and it really hasn't. Sean McDermott told that to us point blank. We asked if there were guys that were going to make the team this weekend on special teams. He said, absolutely. Absolutely they are, because that's the spots that have not been decided yet. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about here. They want to find out, obviously, who Kyrie Elam are, who Christian Benford is, who they are really, you know, continue to find that out, who Baylen Specter is, you know, who Bernard is, as these young players that are here. But the simple fact of the matter is the decisions that still have to be made about this roster are special teams contributors. If they can come out and prove it again tonight, or if they can prove it tonight, they make the 53, and that's big. It's very big for these guys, and you got to convince them that that's the way it's going to be.
803-0550-1888-550-2550. The Friday fan mailbag's open. If you got a question about the roster, the team, etc., who you feel might be on the bubble, who's got to show out tonight, if you have questions about that, we're happy to answer those for you. Let's go to the phones now, and leading us off here is Lou in Rochester. Lou, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi. Two things. One, I think that Kumerow and Hodgins should be cut, and Sweeney and Moore should be saved because they're better players, and they'll be probably taken by the Giants if they were cut. They could probably sneak the other two back on the practice squad. But the second thing is, like, I think Goodell is missing an opportunity to make a statement on player safety. If the NFL is going to go to an 18-game schedule, which they're headed toward, and eliminate a third preseason game. They're going to need joint practices. They can't have that kind of malarkey, like you said, constant fighting going on. And what happened with Donald yesterday was so egregious. He's lucky that the other player, like you mentioned, was wearing a helmet. And who knows what the extent of the injury to the second player was. But I think the NFL clearly has authority under their personal conduct policy. I think Sneaky Joe read the policy earlier in the show. It's clear that it's there. They're just saving Donald for the drama of the first game. He really needs to be punished, and they should make a statement where player safety is paramount.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Lou. Real quick, why do you think it's an either-or with Kumerow and Hodgins or Sweeney? Can't you come up with a way where you keep one of those receivers and Sweeney? Or do you just not like those two?
I just don't think they've been impressive at all. They're not real NFL-type players in their positions, Kumerow and Hodgins. I think that Sweeney and Morris have much more upside potential, and they've already proven it. And they're going to be taken by the bowl for sure.
Yeah. All right. Good call, Lou. We thank you for it. Concerning the Aaron Donald situation, which I brought up while you were connecting, Steve, I was just saying I cannot remember a preseason where there were more major issues in joint practices than we've seen this summer. I mean, I'm sure there have been some, but the level of stupidity just seems to get a little too far. I mean, you can't be swinging a helmet around like a weapon. Myles Garrett got suspended 6 games for doing that. So, I don't know. According to the letter of the law, I don't believe that practices can be can face league discipline. They're handled at the club level. And you know the Rams aren't going to do anything to Aaron Donald. So I don't know where it goes.
Here's the thing, Brown, and I get it. It looks really egregious when you got all these guys pushing around and you got helmets swinging. And, you know, in common society, this would be a, you know, prosecutable offense. The simple fact of the matter is you're going to have a hard time even finding a football player or a coach or anybody. You're going to have a hard time finding anybody whose pulse changes because of this fight. And this is nothing. Just like the ones in Carolina and with the Patriots are nothing. The football end of this isn't a blip on the radar. Swinging a helmet or not. It's absolutely, I mean, you see it now because more these days because fans are there and they have phones.
Yeah.
This is not, I hate to say it like that, but it's not out of the ordinary. It's not out of the expected conflict that you get when guys are in the stress level of trying to make a 53-man roster. It's not something that has not happened before and won't happen again. The fact that the general public is getting a glimpse of it, it may be shocking to some people. For football people, it's not. This is nothing. Aaron, you can say what you want about guys losing their minds and all that. And yeah, guys have done that for a long time. It's happened, no question about it. But the simple fact of the matter is Aaron Donald, as crazy as it might look and as much as he might have lost his mind, would never have been swinging that at a guy who was not wearing a helmet. He wouldn't have been doing that. He wouldn't have done something that would have really hurt somebody. But when you go out there with shoulder pads and a helmet on, you're doing stuff, that kind of contact, without somebody swinging on you every play. So it's hard for anybody to really, for football people, to get bent out of shape over a brawl like this between two teams in a practice. It's just not worth the effort.
Because you don't think it's going to change anything?
No.
That's why it's not worth it.
It might change something. It might change something, yeah, down the road. But, you're talking about, certainly Aaron Donald is a veteran player, and he's been around the block more than once in the National Football League. And, but for the most part, veteran players don't do that kind of stuff, even though this was Aaron Donald. I don't know who the guy was he was swinging on, whether it was a young guy, whether it was an old guy, all of that. The simple fact of the matter is you're not going to get any movement on the NFL of changing policies or trying to legislate fighting in the preseason joint practice,
yeah,
legislate that out of the game? I mean, what do you? You're never going to do it.
I'm not. Yeah, I guess I'm not talking about legislating it out of the game, but swinging a helmet around is not good. Like, you hit the wrong person with that, you could really hurt somebody.
We've had I've given humorous accounts, you know, to you and other people about what it used to be like when I played.
Yeah, and the steroid.
And I know I sound like an old guy here, obviously. Back in the age when steroids were more prevalent, way more prevalent than they are now. And you needed guys who were big enough and strong enough to break fights up. I would also challenge anybody who's criticizing the behavior that they just saw in the film that we've been showing of Aaron Donald and the Cincinnati Bengals and the Rams getting into this fight. I would challenge anybody to go in there after the practice and find anybody who was even ruffled by it after the fact. The players involved, Aaron Donald, the Cincinnati Bengals, I would say have a conversation with those guys, see what they think about it. You'd be shocked that with the nonchalance that they address it with.
Yeah.
So that's Aaron Donald and the guy he was swinging the helmet at. So if that's the case, if the guy he's swinging the helmet at wants to come out and say, "Hey, I want something done for him," yeah, that would be something different. You'd be challenged to find anybody to admit they're the guy he was swinging at, because it's just not that big a deal. And I know how it looks because we all live in a polite society, most of us, where people don't swing objects at people and with the force like that and with the intent of that. It's part of what the conflict that we're all find so intriguing of watching NFL games is, part of what is enticing about watching it. Big guys pushing against each other against their will, and their tempers got the best of them for a moment. Now it's gone. It's over. And like I said, after that practice, the players themselves will be talking about other things, not that fight. So I get that it's on everybody's mind, and you can look back at Myles Garrett and what happened between him and Mason Rudolph on a Monday Night Football game on national TV and say it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. It looks like the same thing. It's not. I know it's a fine line, and we're talking about things that maybe don't make sense or aren't logical, but the simple fact of the matter is, for most guys who have played and been to training camps and played in the National Football League, that fight, as big as it was and as many guys there was, and same thing with the Patriots and the Carolina Panthers last week, it's not even a blip on the radar. It's just like, we got to move on. We got a game to get ready for. This isn't even a conversation in film. So, yeah. So I get how people are looking at this going, wow, how can that happen? That's part of the intensity of an NFL practice.
Yeah.
And while it's not acceptable, even for the coach to the player, they don't want that stuff to happen. But certainly when you break it up and everything, cooler heads prevail, they move on.
All right. We got to take a break here. But when we come back, we're going to be joined by former college football head coach Butch Davis, who was Ken Dorsey's head coach at the University of Miami when he was quarterbacking them to back-to-back national title games. We'll catch up with Coach Davis when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to be joined now by a guy that's coached in the college game and a little bit in the NFL for over 40 years, former head coach of the University of Miami, Butch Davis, joining us here, who obviously had Ken Dorsey as his quarterback down there when they won a national championship. Coach, how you doing?
Doing good, Chris. It's good to be with you.
So let's start here on the subject of Ken. You get him down there in Coral Gables. Whether it was on a recruiting visit to his house in high school, or whether once you got him on campus, what stuck out the most about his personality from the time you first met him?
Well, the very first time I saw him, obviously I'd watched all of his high school film, and he'd had a very, very successful high school career. But I flew from Miami on a red flight all the way to San Francisco, rented a car, went, and they were going to play a basketball scrimmage at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I get there and I look and I go, oh man, they're his Kenny's team. They're going to get blown out of this gym. There's got no chance. The other team was way more athletic, more bigger, stronger. And they start the scrimmage and Kenny immediately, it jumped out what he did great with the ball. He brought the ball down the field. Here's a guy that's 6'5" as a skinny, you know, point guard in basketball. And he's looking the defenders off in the one side and he's hitting guys on breaks in the backside. And I thought, that's a quarterback, a guy that can find the open receivers and get guys. And they won the scrimmage and stuff. But then obviously when he came down, you know, I mean, we had some unbelievably talented players. And at Miami, obviously, he started 6 games for us and played a lot as a true freshman. We beat the number 10 Georgia Tech in the Gator Bowl. But then the next 3 years, super games. I mean, Kenny's been in some unbelievable games from a collegiate standpoint, beating the number 1 team, Florida State, and beating the number 2 team, Virginia Tech. And we beat Florida in the Sugar Bowl. The next year, they win the national championships, winning in the Rose Bowl. The next year, they should have won the national championship. They kind of got a little bit hosed on the deal, but they played in the Fiesta Bowl. So from a career, from a collegiate standpoint, he had unbelievable, you know, background from that. But then he got a chance to get into coaching in the National Football League after he played with the 49ers and the Browns, and he got into Super Bowl 50 for the Carolina Panthers. And so when you look at his resume, there's so many great things that Kenny's been involved in. And 1 year that he was out of coaching from the Carolina Panthers, he came to FIU while I was there. And both of us probably had one of the happiest times that we've had from a collegiate standpoint, that we both beat the University of Miami, which FIU should never beat the University of Miami. There's no way. But we upset them and we beat them. And you know, and Kenny was a big deal. We had a quarterback, James Morgan, that was a 4th-round draft choice of the Jets. And he really, truly helped James, his mentality. And so you learn from a head coach's standpoint, you watch him and you see, you know, how meticulous he is, how smart he is, how creative he is. And I think, you know, his playing, you know, the years in college, you know, he was surrounded with, you know, Jeremy Shockey and Kellen Winslow, and he had all the great wide receivers, Reggie Wayne and stuff. And the thing that you watch him as a play caller, he's going to find ways to help Josh, you know, who's one of the best absolute quarterbacks in the National Football League. They're going to find ways to get the ball in the hands of the guys that can help win games. And so, you know, I know a lot of people are kind of like, oh, he's never been a coordinator before and stuff, but he's going to do a great job. He'll really get a great offensive, you know, game plans every single week.
What about his ability to, you know, because you've seen him as a coach, you saw him as a player as well, but then when he moved up to the coaching, what kind of, I mean, is he, you know, he kind of strikes us, you know, that you always get these thoughts about coaches being kind of grinders as they prepare. What kind of, how does that, you know, what kind of, does he bring to the preparation process for his players and his teammates and his coaching staff?
Yeah, you know, Steve, that's a great question, because I think if you go back and you look at the guys that he played with collegiately, I mean, you're talking about 2 or 3 first-round draft choices at running back, and Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson, Santana Moss, and all of these guys, they were unbelievably high-profile players, but they had great respect for Kenny. They knew what a grinder he was, how much he watched film, and then when he was on the field, they listened to him. And I think that that's one of the things that the players at Buffalo, they're going to understand that he is going to turn over every single rock to try to find a way to win every single game and get the ball in the hands of guys and cut out all the bad things, the things that can that where you can lose games, protections and turnovers and those kind of things. And because the one thing about Kenny that was really, you know, impressive to me coming from high school into college was how smart. I mean, he learned our pro offensive almost immediately. And as a true freshman, when you come in and you can play with all of those guys, you know, as a true freshman, you get a lot of respect.
What was it, Coach, about his makeup that made him so good in those high pressure situations, even as a young player?
You know, I think it's poise, and I think he has an awful lot of confidence that he knows how much film that he studied. He knew the game plan. He knew exactly what needed to be done. And he knows, I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that I've seen in all the years that I spent it with the Dallas Cowboys and the Cleveland Browns and Tampa Bay Buccaneers and all that. And you see a lot of quarterbacks that they don't know the difference between what are great plays and what are plays that you're trying to make that can lose the game. And I think that Kenny can do a great job. I mean, he's just got a super quarterback with Josh Allen. And I think that they'll be able to communicate and they'll be able to talk after every single possession on the sidelines and obviously the week leading up to the games and stuff. I think that they'll click. I mean, Kenny's not one of those guys that's going to like lose his mind. I mean, sometimes you see coaches that are just, you know, they're throwing their headphones, they're all mad, they're upset, and they destroy the mentality that a quarterback needs to be during the course of a game.
What would you, if you had to guess now, because we haven't seen it yet, just describe, give a description of what you think Kenny Dorsey's offense will be. I mean, what do you think? Give it a personality from this end of it.
Well, I haven't studied Buffalo's, you know, I watched a little bit of one of the preseason games the other night. And I know that, you know, I mean, I just think that Kenny's smart enough and the things that I've seen him do when he was at Miami and then obviously at Carolina, what can the quarterback do? Don't ask the quarterback to do things. Well, Josh can do just about everything. So, and then what's the supporting deal? They've got a great running back, the Singletary kid from FAU. I mean, that kid's electric and he can make plays. So they're going to find ways to run the ball, play action pass. They're going to get explosive plays with good wide receivers and stuff. One of the things that, you know, and I don't know much about the tight ends and the H-backs at Buffalo, but I know this, that, you know, at Miami, he was surrounded by guys like Jeremy Shockey and a lot of really great tight end players and Kellen Winslow Jr. And so, you know, if they have that, he'll find ways to get all of those in personnel groupings to make them a big part of the game plans every single Sunday.
Knowing how smart he was from an early age, Coach, did you ever envision even back then that he's probably going to be a coach someday? Was that a thought that crossed your mind even way back then?
Yeah, you kind of, like a lot of the kids that I had, you go, you know what, if they ever do get in coaching, they're going to be really good, you know, because of the way in which that they – you know how kids relate to not only the coaches, but how do they relate to their teammates? You know, and when you step in the huddle and you're standing in a huddle and you know, there's seven other guys in the huddle that are going to be first round draft choices and you can get those guys to play to the highest level, he ought to be a coach, you know? And I mean, we had, you know, Bryant McKinney, the left tackle, we had some great players in the offensive line and the receivers, but they honest to God, they really, truly, they respected Kenny the way that he practiced and the way they knew he was going to be prepared, and they trusted him that on Saturday when it was time to show up, I mean, his record is 38-2, so that's a pretty good record. They know he's going to do what it takes to win the game.
What do you think about when he'd come off the field as a quarterback? What was his demeanor like when things were – I know it didn't go very bad for him and very much at Miami. What kind of guy was he between series and as – you know, as with his teammates, that kind of stuff on the sidelines?
Yeah. He wanted to know exactly what was going on. I mean, he would come to the sidelines and there'd be a, you know, Larry Coker, who was the offensive coordinator, and he, you know, I'd hired him and Larry and I'd been together at Oklahoma State with Jimmy Johnson, and they had a good communication on the sideline as to, okay, how did you see this? Are they doing exactly what we saw on the film in preparation? Because all the good teams, they're going to throw wrinkles in. They're going to, whether it's disguises, they're going to show you a certain coverage. And then time comes down or as motion happens or shifts, they're going to change things. And so, you know, Kenny, are you on the same page? Did you see it the same way that we did? Yeah, we did, and whatever. And again, we go back to the idea that Kenny was smart. And so he has the ability to immediately change things in his mind. Okay, hey, we thought that they were going to do this. If we got into trips, they're going to play this. They didn't. Okay, well, now your reads are going to be this, this, and this, and we're going to change it to that. And so I think that's one of the really, really good things about being a smart quarterback. I've been blessed. I mean, with the coaching career, obviously, at Miami as an assistant coach, we had Bernie Kosar and Vinny Testaverde and Steve Walsh. We had all kinds of quarterbacks at Oklahoma State and stuff. And the guy that was probably somewhat similar to Kenny as a player was probably Bernie Kosar. I mean, he was a brilliant, smart guy. And you know, it didn't matter what you showed up. You wanted to, if you said they're going to always play cover two on this down and distance and they played something else, it didn't make any difference. He knew how to read things and get the ball to things. And I think that that's what Kenny's going to be able to do, you know, with Josh.
I got to get your take on this, Coach, because Coach Dorsey is still going through the decision on whether to be upstairs or down on the sidelines as the coordinator. He spent most of the preseason upstairs because he spent most of his coaching career on the sidelines, so he's familiar with that.
Yeah.
But when we ask his players, they're like, oh, no, he's got to go up in the booth. He's too hyper-competitive.
Absolutely.
He's going to go nuts on the sidelines. We can't have him cussing out an official or something. Have you ever seen the hyper-competitive, excitable side of Ken?
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen it in scrimmages. I've seen it in games. I've seen it in preparation for high-profile games when we played Virginia Tech and Florida State and Florida and those teams and stuff like that. But I will tell you, I'm going to be on the same side as the players. I love for the coordinators, especially, to be in the press box. For all the years that I was a head coach and all the years that I was with Jimmy Johnson, you know, the coordinators were up there because you get great vision. You get a chance to see everything. You got all the, you know, the opportunity to you see things immediately before the ball's ever snapped. You get all the, you know, it's such a better view being up there than it is being down on the sidelines. I know that there's a lot of guys that they want to be down there to make calls, or they want to, you know, if you don't have somebody that can communicate and talk to the players, you know, then that's a different story, where sometimes maybe a defensive coordinator being on the sidelines because they need to make adjustments with the front seven or the back seven, and they can't get it done from the press box. But Jimmy Johnson just believed, and we had guys, I mean, we had Norv Turner, Ernie Zampezi. We had some unbelievable great offensive coordinators, and I sat in the press box with them up there, and you loved being there watching how they saw things, and they knew immediately the very next possession, we got to change this. We got to do this.
Well, Butch, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on. Everybody's very curious about Kenny, how he's going to do it. In fact, you and Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator, the first people we call have ever called him Kenny. Everybody up here is Ken, you know. So
if you knew him since he was 17 years old, you'd probably call him Kenny, you know.
I guess. So thanks, Butch. We appreciate your time.
You bet, guys. Great to visit with you and tell Kenny I said hello.
We will definitely do that. Thanks, Coach. That's former and longtime college coach and NFL coach Butch Davis joining us here. We have to take a break. We'll be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Bills tickets, check. Face paint, check. Your favorite apple with the epic crunch, almost. Snapdragon apples will be rushing into a Wegmans near you soon. Snapdragon apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, that's right, folks. We have an official apple. Snapdragon. All right. I don't know about you. I'm pretty fired up about that.
Me. I got to be honest. Snapdragon. Yeah. I like it.
It's a snappy name, for sure.
That's right.
I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this, Steve, but preseason game number 3, and I don't know if you saw this, but the guys at NFL.com, they picked half a dozen rookies who they believe could make Ja'Marr Chase-like impact in their rookie season. I'm going to give you the guys they have on the list. You tell me what you think.
All right, go.
Kenny Pickett, Steelers QB. Chris Olave, Saints wide receiver. Drake London, Falcons wideout. Romeo Doubs, Packers wideout. And James Cook, Bills running back. Which one of those guys do you think has the best shot to have Ja'Marr Chase-like impact this year?
I like Chris Olave.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick too.
Yeah, I liked him coming out. He wasn't available when the Bills picked. And I don't know that the Bills were going to go to that position anyway, given the strength of that spot for everybody already, but he can play. That kid can play. I don't know who picked him. I can't even remember now.
The Saints.
Yeah. That may be a problem. And I don't know how much Jameis Winston and you know, Dennis Allen are going to be able to mimic what Sean Payton did with the offense of the Saints. But I think that kid can really play. Of course, James Cook has been my dark horse for this, you know, for this team as well. James Cook's going to play some tonight. It'll be interesting to see how long he goes. He's going to start at running back for the Bills. Third preseason game. Yeah, that's an interesting move by the team. I mean, I don't think there's any question he's going to be on the 53. There's got to be a reason why he's out there. So, and it's probably not all that great of a reason. I don't know. I'm interested to see this. I'm sure Blackshear is going to get a ton of reps as well. We'll just watch how it goes. But yeah, James Cook, I've said from the beginning, you and I both have thought this guy was going to be a difference maker for this club. We'll see if indeed he gets some touches tonight and we can see some more of that.
The reason Olave makes sense to me is at worst, he's going to be their number two receiver down there. And if Michael Thomas is healthy, he's going to draw a lot of the attention. And then you're playing with a veteran quarterback in Winston, who granted is coming off a knee injury, but you know, he knows what he's looking at, and he's had some good early chemistry with Olave, who is a precise route runner. So I think the upside there is good. Drake London, I worry about the quarterback throwing to him, which looks like it's going to be Marcus Mariota. I mean, Dobbs could have some success in Green Bay, you know, knowing that that wide receiving core has been thinned out somewhat. You know, Devontae Adams isn't there anymore, and neither is Marquez Valdez-Scantling. So there are opportunities to be had there if you can prove yourself worthy, as we heard Aaron Rodgers so eloquently state just last week.
Right.
Cook would have to kind of zoom to the top of the pecking order at running back, I think, to match what I believe Olave is capable of. I forgot to list the last guy, Trayvon Walker, the number one pick in the draft, the pass rusher from Jacksonville. The interesting thing about Trayvon Walker is, you know, the guy on the other side, their pass rusher, Josh Allen, is going to demand a lot of attention over there. So he's almost going to be in like a Greg Rousseau situation here in Buffalo with Von Miller on the other side. And so you wonder, with the physical skill set that Trayvon Walker brings to the table, might he have opportunities to load up on sacks, not unlike the way Micah Parsons did last year?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be interesting because I think Jacksonville is going to be significantly better than they were a year ago. I think they're not going to be the fourth place team in that division anymore. Houston might be. I think they're going to be in a tussle with Tennessee. I think they can give Tennessee a run for their money this year. And, you know, I think with a lot of people, I think Indianapolis is the team to beat in that division, even with a brand new quarterback again. I don't think that's going to cause them to, you know, falter at all. I'm not really sold on Indianapolis' top wide receivers, but their running game is legit and their quarterback's legit still. So I think Indianapolis is going to be a good team. But I think Jacksonville is going to be significantly better. And a large reason, a guy like Trayvon Walker going along on the other side of Josh Allen. You know, another guy on that list that you read to me, Kenny Pickett, I'm intrigued by him. Certainly he splashed in his first preseason game when he came in, ran around and made some plays and did some things that the Pittsburgh Steelers team and organization franchise hasn't seen in the last 10 years from Ben Roethlisberger. Mike Tomlin said that Mitch Trubisky is going to start this preseason game. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the Steelers or for what it says about their quarterback competition, whether Kenny Pickett is being saved. We'll have to see if he plays in the game and how much that is and how much Trubisky plays. But I think Pittsburgh's going to be a significantly better squad. They, you know, they're – Mike Tomlin is a really good coach, and they maximize their roster. And they've got, over the last 3 years, the guy that's got more sacks than anybody in T.J. Watt. They got some guys defensively. And I think offensively they'll find some help as well. So I think Kenny Pickett, if depending on how this plays out, if he plays for Pittsburgh, he wins this contest. You know? But I don't know that he's going to.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to play out. It's interesting that you mentioned Jacksonville because I picked them to be my most improved team this year. Wouldn't be surprised if we see that. But, yeah, Pickett's got to get on the field. And does it happen? I suppose you can make the argument that as soon as Trubisky struggles for a week or two, they may turn the page and put the kid in. When that happens, though, is going to be critical in terms of him even being a factor on this list here. All right, good discussion on that. I was just curious what your thoughts were. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more Bills-Panthers with Panthers radio color analyst Jim Zocchi. He's going to be joining us next, kind of give us the lowdown. We know Baker Mayfield is starting the game, and most of the starters will play into the second quarter. We want to know what goes on after that. Jim Zocchi will help us out with that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, welcome to hour number two here on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we're joined now by radio color analyst for the Carolina Panthers, also the radio sports director there in Charlotte for WBT Radio. It is Jim Zocchi joining us. Jim, thanks for giving us some time, especially on a game day. Appreciate it. We know this much, Jim. You know, we heard Coach Rhule say starters are going to play. They didn't play last week, so it only makes sense that they'll get their final dress rehearsal in here, saying that, you know, Baker and the starters could go into the second quarter, depending on how the game unfolds, how many possessions they get and whatnot. What does this offense and Baker need to show, do you think, this coaching staff to prove they're ready for the regular season?
Yeah, I think for this one, Chris, like you said, they'll play into the second quarter with the starters that will play in this game. And, you know, a lot of it is just self-scouting, honestly. It's a lot of just, you know, things that you need to do as a team to get the clock right, to have smooth operations. It's mundane stuff that the fans probably don't want to hear about, but, you know, getting it out of the huddle, get everyone set right, and, you know, making, you know, changes, those kind of things. Baker's only played one series of in-game football. He didn't play last week. Starters didn't play last week against New England. He played the first series against Washington, had the joint practice sessions where they got a lot of work in, of course, with New England before that. But this will be only the second series that he goes out there as a quarterback. And he was just named the starter this past Monday. So this is his first week of taking all the reps in practice with the first team. So it's a chance to kind of put all that together on the field and see what it looks like under some live fire.
From a million miles away, like we are up here in Buffalo, and we're all things Buffalo Bills all the time. What has the competition between Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield looked like? And was it a surprise that Baker got the job? Did people see it coming? How did it transpire? And give us a little synopsis of the timeline of when the decision was made and what it looked like it was going to be.
Yeah, Steve, I think they tried to make it a fair competition. I mean, they really split the reps right down the middle during the practice sessions, during the first game, even against Washington when they both played. So I think they gave Sam really a fair shot. He's the incumbent here, but, you know, Baker was brought in for a reason. And I think when they made that trade, which was after all the spring football took place already, that the feeling was that, you know, Baker, barring something unforeseen, would win the job. He's a smart guy. He's taking this offense quickly. It's a new offense for everybody with Ben McAdoo here as the offensive coordinator. But of course, Sam Darnold had the ability to have it during the spring. And it was part of the team last year, obviously, after 3 years with the Jets. But for Baker, it's been really taking it in quickly, trying to learn it. And I think for him, it felt like this was the way it was going to go, but I think they did try to make it a fair competition. And until Monday, they didn't announce that. And so now he's taking all the reps, and we'll see what that looks like now moving forward with him playing all the first team reps.
What younger players on the roster, Jim, have kind of maybe opened some eyes? I know Coach was speaking favorably of Shai Smith, the second year receiver, mm-hmm. but Who would be on that list of pleasant surprises, young players that look like they're going to make bigger contributions for the Panthers this year than maybe people thought?
Yeah, stick with wide receiver. Shai Smith is a good one there because he didn't do much as a rookie last year. He was a sixth-round pick out of South Carolina. But he has really, you know, earned it in practice and made plays. And he's a guy that is pushing for a starting job. It's DJ Moore. It's Robbie Anderson. But, you know, the three-receiver set, things like that. Shai Smith will probably play a lot tonight in this game. I think, you know, it's an important time right now for Terrace Marshall. He was a second-round pick last year out of LSU. So when he has been healthy, and he's been dealing with a hamstring off and on, he has been really dynamic out there. It's just he only had 17 catches last year as a rookie. He's expected to play tonight. So I think in terms of watching the game, watching 88, watching 12, those are two guys to keep an eye on out there. I'll be interested to see, since we've had this new coaching regime, the tight end has not been involved. You're now on a second offensive coordinator. You know, will Ben McAdoo get someone like Tommy Tremble, the second-year player, involved with the offense? And, again, we're not going to see a ton of anything tonight, but that'll be interesting to watch to see how he does in this offense. And we'll want to see what Ike Ekwonu does, left tackle out of NC State, their top pick. He was the sixth overall pick in the draft. He had some struggles in the pass protection last week against New England. We'll see what he can do, obviously, moving forward, getting ready. He is the starter, so he's got week one with Myles Garrett there. And then quickly on defense, a guy, Tay Hayes, out of Appalachian State. He just got here about 3 weeks ago, but he's turned heads as a smaller cornerback that makes plays. He had the pick six last week in the Panthers game against New England. So he's a guy right now trying to earn a roster spot in the truest sense.
How is that front seven looking for Carolina in, you know, the pass rush? They still run the 4-3 defense. Who are some standouts there, and who's going to be their main pass rusher, sack getter this year?
Yeah, you know, the main guy is Brian Burns, and he went to the Pro Bowl last year. He's had 9 sacks each of the last 2 years, but he lost his other tag team partner on the other side with Hassan Reddick with Philadelphia now. So a little bit by committee as far as getting the edge rusher on the other side down. Yetur Gross-Matos in his third year out of Penn State will be a guy that will be the first in line. But Marquise Haynes is a veteran. Mari Barno, sixth-round pick they drafted out of Virginia Tech this year, are right now those guys. But would not be surprised as far as talking about that position if they're not very active when they make roster cutdowns around the league to bring in another pass rusher. And in the middle, too, we got Derek Brown and Matt Ioannidis in the middle there, but not a lot of depth behind them. So if there's not so much a concern, but a place where you probably will see some movement once the roster cuts are made around the league, it's probably defensive line. But linebacker looks good. Front seven, talk about Shaq Thompson back for another year. This is like his 8th year with the Panthers, obviously. They brought in 2 veterans with Damian Wilson, Corey Littleton. They'll see a lot of time with Frankie Louvu. So linebacker's pretty well set, but that defensive front four is probably where the most opportunity outside of Brian Burns lays.
And how about our old friend Andre Roberts, still doing it at age 34? Is he safe on the roster, or might Shai Smith like kind of contend with him for return duties? How does that competition shake out?
Now, they've really made an emphasis this year on special teams. Brought in Chris Tabor is the special teams coordinator. And they've got guys that are veteran at all the positions there. So Andre Roberts, with his 3 Pro Bowl appearances, is a guy that'll be the kick and the punt returner. And then you'll have some depth behind him. But special teams are a strong point of emphasis for this team. So, you know, they're going, you know, not so much developmental there, but with what they know. J.J. Jansen, the long snapper, is 15 years in the league. They brought in Johnny Hecker from the Rams, of course, one of the great punters on the all decade team from last year. Zane Gonzalez, a veteran that's been around for 5 years. So it's a pretty veteran crew as far as the frontline guys. The real battles are the core, like the coverage, those kind of teams. And those players will decide the last few spots on the roster, but Andre will be safe.
At this point, Matt Rhule entering his third season with the team, and he has, you know, tinkered with his coaching staff a little bit too. Joe Brady, now with the Buffalo Bills, was the OC last year, got let go midway through the season. Even guys like Ken Dorsey, who has been in Carolina, is now up as the OC at Buffalo. What about Matt Rhule and tinkering with the staff, getting things just right? How is his program taking hold, and how many strides do you think they've made this offseason?
Yeah, so it's a lot more veteran staff this year in particular. It was very collegiate staff when he came aboard from Baylor, and a lot of those were ties to the college game, including Joe Brady, who mostly was a college coach at LSU and some other stops. But now, as I mentioned, Ben McAdoo's been a head coach in this league. He's the offensive coordinator. Chris Tabor is a special teams coordinator. I think he's got 15 years in the NFL, let alone college beyond that. Steve Wilks is back for a second time with the Panthers. as a secondary coach. And this was a guy that was a head coach with Arizona, didn't get much of a look, only got 1 year there. And it really wasn't a good situation. I don't think he got a good look as far as being fair out in Arizona when he got that opportunity out there. Paul Pasqualoni, of course, tons of experience. Your Syracuse people know all about him as the defensive line coach. And then bringing in James Campen, who's so well-respected as an offensive line coach, long time with the Green Bay Packers. You know, these are veteran guys that either positions or as former head coaches, longtime college coaches, bring a lot more experience and some more eyes and ears that weren't here in the past.
Jim, we know that Christian McCaffrey is more than capable of being a focal point of an offense from a talent standpoint, but we know that injuries have been a persistent issue for him in his young career the past 2 years. Has Coach Rhule entertained any thought of, I guess, scaling back his workload to kind of preserve him, so to speak, especially knowing now that you're dealing with a 17-game season? He's not gigantic in stature, and I'm just thinking about wear and tear here. Has he entertained those kinds of thoughts? Has he been asked about that? I'm just curious what he's mentioned, if anything at all, about McCaffrey's workload going forward.
Yeah, see, as far as what's been going on in his career, the first 3 years he was healthy and put up incredible numbers. In the last 2 years, it's been one injury after another. They've hit early. But the good news about the injury is that it's been stuff, has been soft tissue injuries, things that will shut him down for a period of time. As he enters this season right now, he's completely healthy, so nothing carryover-wise from that. But they've not practiced him more than 2 days in a row during this whole training camp. If he goes 2 days in a row, he doesn't practice the third day even this week. So they've certainly, you know, limited those touches and reps in practice. He did take a big part in those joint practice sessions with New England. You probably saw last week there was a fight that actually involved McCaffrey getting knocked down to the ground, and that's where that one major incident happened on the sidelines against New England. So he practices hard when he's out there. But I do think they're monitoring that. They did bring in Deontay Foreman, who's a bigger bruiser running back, who was the backup for Derrick Henry with Tennessee last year. Chuba Hubbard's in his second year. His style and speed kind of more replicate the type of player that McCaffrey is. So there's three backs there, and fullback Gio Ricci, where in theory McCaffrey shouldn't have to touch the ball as much. But, you know, when you get into a game and you're competitive and he's your best player and your best player by far, you know, it's hard not to give him the ball 25 to 30 times in regular season games. So hopefully, you know, that's what's going to happen on Sundays, and they just kind of monitor him during the week and let him recover and get healthy for the next one.
What about the expectations for the fan base here in Carolina and also within the building for inside their own division with, you know, Atlanta seemingly in a rebuild, New Orleans with a head coaching change, and of course Tampa Bay standing there as a perennial playoff team? What are the expectations for how things might change this year for the Panthers?
You know, it's year three of this regime, and they've won five games each of the last 3 years, two under Matt Rhule, and the last year of Ron Rivera being here. So, yeah, that's not a lot of wins per season when you get five each year. And so this year the expectation is to be a playoff contender. You know, if you make the playoffs, that's obviously the goal. But I think they take big strides towards being a team that at least is in the fight to the last game or two to get a playoff spot. I think that would at least satisfy people that, you know, progress is being made. And, you know, really what's going to be intriguing is watching, you know, what happens at quarterback. Baker Mayfield, of course, and Sam Darnold are both in the final years of their contracts. And you want to think, you know, Darnold's a candidate to come back. You know, Baker, if he plays well, do you bring him back? And then you got the rookie Matt Corral, who's out for the season with the Liz Frank foot injury. So he'll not play at all this year after he hurt last week. You know, what does quarterback look like beyond this season? So they'll get some answers this year, but they'll also have some big question marks probably around the end of the year about what to do moving forward with the most important position.
What are the fan expectations in terms of where Carolina can realistically finish? Tampa still seems to be the top dog in the division, but we know that Atlanta's kind of in a stopgap quarterback mode with Marcus Mariota there. Jameis Winston's coming off a major injury down in New Orleans. They've got a new head coach, although he's been there before as the defensive coordinator. What are the expectations for the division race here?
You know, as far as just on sports talk and what's bannered around for numbers, you hear anything from 6 wins to 9 wins, probably. Nine, obviously, with a 17-game schedule, gets you 9-8, gives you a chance to compete and be in a playoff spot possibly there. But, you know, Atlanta's a young team that's, it looks like they got a ways to go. They're trying to figure out their quarterback position. So Panthers fans probably feel like they're better than Atlanta. New Orleans a little bit of a wild card, as we said, because Jameis Winston played very well with Sean Payton there last year prior to his early season injury. You know, what does that look like with Dennis Allen and the different coaching staff down there? Was that Sean Payton magic, or is that Jameis Winston's turn to corner? You know, their defense will be good, obviously. They got some great skill players there. So, you know, definitely chasing Tampa Bay are all three of those teams. And then, you know, will it be Carolina or will it be New Orleans is probably the thinking heading in right now with the expectation that the Panthers could finish ahead of the Atlanta Falcons.
What was the most stark difference in your offense once Joe Brady was out and the new guy came in? What's going to be different, and what has been the personality of the new offensive coordinator?
You know, they want to be a little more old school. I think they want to be physical, and they want to have success running the football. And I think that's probably the biggest change overall, is more of an emphasis on that. You've got Christian McCaffrey healthy now, which you didn't have last year, but you got that, again, bruising kind of a running back in Deontay Foreman out there. So I expect them to try behind again, we haven't mentioned the offensive line beyond Ike Ekwonu. They brought in Austin Corbett from the Rams. Bradley Bozeman's hurt right now, but he's a big option at center. You know, Taylor Moten's been their stud at right tackle. He's got the long-term contract here. So now you've got some pieces there to complete an offensive line with probably Brady Christensen at left guard that should be able to hold up and run. And Ike Ekwonu should be really kind of elite in the run game at left tackle once he gets out there and has everything completely under control as far as knowing what a rookie needs to know. So that should provide a better chance to run the ball. And then with that, you know, we've not used a tight end much, getting the tight ends involved, and then being able to take your shots down the field. You know, Ben McAdoo's a guy that wants to take deep shots, and they've done that in practice at times. And they've got speed guys. Robbie Anderson can take the top off of the defense, and they've got some other speed guys that can get out there and do the same. So they'll open it up when they want to, but I think probably the biggest characteristic is being a physical team that can run the ball, not turn the ball over, and then when the opportunities are there, you know, take your shots. As opposed to Joe Brady, I think it was a little bit more the first year, DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson both had over 1,000 yards receiving. I think it was a little bit more wide open that first year with Teddy Bridgewater. I think it's going to be probably dialed down a little bit and a little bit more conservative with this look.
Jim, thanks for the time. We appreciate you kind of getting us up to speed on the Panthers for tonight's game. We'll catch up with you down the line. Enjoy the season.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Jim Szoke joining us here on One Bills Live in advance of tonight's preseason game that gets started down there in Charlotte. Kickoff is, 7 o'clock tonight, Steve? I can't even remember. I think it's a
7 p.m. Yeah,
7 p.m. kickoff.
I'm in this hotel room waiting and marking time. I think we'll probably head. There's nothing to do, so you got to kind of. I'll probably head over about 4 o'clock for this game.
Yeah.
And start getting ready for the broadcast. Obviously, a lot going on that we have to talk about. But yeah, it's smoking hot in Carolina.
Oh, is it?
And oh my gosh, yeah. You need gills to breathe down here.
Oh wow. So it's like sticky hot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Just stay inside.
Are you guys usually for your final preseason telecast, you guys get a visit from GM Brandon Bean? Is that going to happen again tonight in the second half?
Don't know. You can imagine things are a little bit of a mess right now,
right,
with what's going on off the field. So don't know if we're going to get him or not. I think there's going to be some, at least some public, more than the statement they've already given. I think we're going to get some of that maybe this afternoon. Obviously there's a lot of media here,
yeah,
and these guys are moving around in it. So I think there's probably going to be something some questions answered today, at least maybe coming up. So that may change things for us in our broadcast, but we'll see. It's a little bit in flux because this, the Matt Araiza issue,
yeah,
got dropped kind of into everybody's lap late yesterday. So I think they're still dealing with the shock of that and what's going to happen as a result of it.
Going back to this matchup with the Panthers, I think the thing that struck me about Jim's characterization of their offense is the lack of involvement with a tight end. Now, you got to have one to involve one, but it kind of makes me harken back to the fact that, you know, Matt Rhule is a former college coach, and there aren't too many offenses in college football that involve a tight end all that much, and I wonder if that's just the transition that he's made from the college game. And I know they drafted Tommy Tremble last year. I think he was like a mid-round pick, the tight end out of Notre Dame, but hearing Jim say that they still really don't involve the tight end all that much is a little I don't know. It just strikes me as a little peculiar.
They're hard to find, right? I mean, it took Dawson Knox a couple of years to finally get into the saddle and be the kind of difference maker he's become, which I think he is. Kittle, Kelsey, you know, those guys, it's easier to steal a tight end from another team than it is to get one in the draft to have him come in and absolutely tear it up. Even the guy in Atlanta last year, whose name escapes me, of the top five,
Kyle Pitts. They took.
Kyle Pitts, great player, and he saw flashes of it. But then, you know, I've said for a long time, it's easier to sign a tight end who's already good. And plus, you're right. You get some coaches, it's hard to incorporate that guy because he's not as fast as, and if he's not as fast as small DBs, he's a little bit better than some of the linebackers. A lot of coaches just don't know what to do with a really great player at that spot because you're so inclined to react to the defensive matchup that it's hard for some coaches to figure out ways to make sure that guy's in a spot where you're going to win the matchup. If you put a corner on him, sometimes a corner can stay with the guy. And if you get a linebacker, certainly you can take advantage of that. But what if you don't get the matchup you're looking for? That's the real problem for tight ends. So, yeah, some coaches, particularly college coaches, I mean, I don't know where you get a good college tight end. You know, certainly we talked to Butch Davis earlier in the show. You know, Jeremy Shockey and Kellen Winslow Jr. Yeah, okay, you got two of those guys. Okay, you figure something out. But a lot of colleges, you know, they just get a big fast guy or a run guy. It's easier to hand the football off or throw it to the fast wide receiver than to create an offense around a guy who's playing at the end of line of scrimmage. It's a tough position to include as a centerpiece of your offense. Teams do it, but it takes a really special guy to convince them that on a consistent basis, week in, week out, no matter where they're lined up or what matchup is given to them by the defense, this guy's going to win. It's a hard thing for a player to prove. So you got a lot of coaches who have not been convinced that they've got a guy like that and therefore have never had to use the guy. That's what I think. So you get a guy like Matt Rhule who comes in from Baylor, a college town, a college school, and he's, you know, same thing with Cliff Kingsbury out in Arizona. You know, you get these guys that come in and then, you know, they've never had a player like that. And certainly if they had him for like 1 or 2 years. So it's a difficult position to incorporate as a centerpiece to me. And you see it so rarely. So it doesn't surprise me that the Panthers haven't had that guy.
Yeah. I think the thing that amazes me, and we talked about this on yesterday's show, is how much draft capital this Panthers team has given up for the quarterback position in an effort to try to get it right. You know, Darnold, they give up a 2 and a 4 last year. This year, they're giving up draft picks for Mayfield. Granted, they've got Cleveland picking up half the tab. I've already seen it tweeted out there that for Week 1, the Browns will pay $15 million in total to two quarterbacks who will not play for them in Week 1 in a couple of weeks, which is a fantastic tweet. The internet remains undefeated. But this is not a team, as Jim confirmed for me when I asked him, that's going to be competing for much of anything this year, and yet they've mortgaged all this capital, draft capital, to build the roster into a contender for quarterbacks that may or may not work out for them. I mean, I think we're pretty confident in saying that both Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold are not going to be on this roster next year.
Right. Well, they're paying Sam a big money, you know, amount too.
Yeah, to be
sit
the back
bench behind Baker. Yeah. Listen, you're preaching to the choir, Brownie. Bills fans know what it's like not to have that guy and not be able to find him and not have the capital to go out and get him. If the guy is out there available. So it's, you know, it's been said a ton. If your NFL franchise doesn't have a quarterback they can win with, the entire organization and fan base is obsessed with it until they do. They're obsessed with it until they do. Is the next guy the guy? I don't know, but we got to find out. That's why the Denver Broncos, I always said John Elway, they used to get crushed for running through quarterbacks, but John Elway knew what he was looking at. If this is the guy, we're getting this guy in. If he's the guy, okay. If he's not, we're finding one who is. We're getting rid of him. He pulled out all the stops to go out late in his career and find and get and recruit Peyton Manning after he was let go by the Colts. And they went to two Super Bowls, could have gone to three and won a couple of them, but they only got one out of it. But nevertheless, they were contenders and they got there and won a championship because they went out and did whatever it took to find that guy and recruit him. Now they're back at it again. They got Russ Wilson. They found a guy. The Indianapolis Colts, it was Andrew Luck, Jacoby Brissett, it was Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, and now it's Matt Ryan. The Carolina Panthers are no different. They went through it.
Yeah.
A 2-4 for Sam Darnold. He's not the guy. Now they got Baker Mayfield in, and they got somebody to foot the bill for at least some of it. They're paying $27 million for two quarterbacks, only one of whom is going to play. The Cleveland Browns, they go out and get a pariah to play quarterback for them.
And pay him $230 guaranteed.
It is never ending in the NFL.
Yeah.
Never ending.
And they gave up three ones for him.
And the team, yes, that's right. And the team that is probably going to get the first pick of the draft next year is the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
Who
don't have one.
No, they don't have a guy. Even Chicago has a guy they've got some hope in.
Yeah.
So it is the all-encompassing question for every team. And the Carolina Panthers hope in their heart of hearts Baker knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
Even if he's going to be a free agent, they're going to have to cough up a lot. At least they got that guy.
Right.
So that's where they're at right now. They've got a guy that they're rolling the dice on a little bit with Baker. He's shown some things for other teams at times, but can he stay healthy and win games and beat at least two of the three other teams in the division? We'll see.
Yeah. Break time for us here when Steve and I come back. Some of your questions from the OBL Friday fan mailbag and a little NFL true false comes your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. It is that time in the show to open up the Friday fan mailbag. And we begin, Steve, here with Sebi, who asks, does keeping two extra quarterbacks hurt our roster numbers? Seems like we could fit someone like Blackshear if we cut a quarterback. Well, the answer here is simple. The Bills are only keeping two on the active roster. That's going to be Allen, and it's going to be Case Keenum. And in all likelihood, Barkley will be one of the six veteran exemptions who they keep on the practice squad. So they're only keeping two to begin with. And, I mean, I guess if you want to make the argument just to have Allen on the active roster and put both of those guys as veteran exemptions on the practice squad, I suppose you could do that, but that's pretty uncharacteristic.
Yeah. I mean, GMs, head coaches, players, and with the new practice squad rules, teams have been jumping through these hoops and we'll continue to, just like our fans are. I mean, can you cut this guy to save this guy? And it comes down to who's going to contribute more on a week-to-week basis as the season rolls on. You're right. You're not going to need – hopefully you need one quarterback, and that's the guy that's taking snaps. Josh, if he takes every snap of the season, that's great. Even in those games, though, where you get up by three touchdowns and there's 5 minutes left, he's going to be in there taking snaps. So you got to have a backup quarterback. You just know that you don't want to go light at certain positions, but you're right. If there's any way, shape, or form to keep a really good player, no matter what position he plays, defensive back, defensive line, linebacker, wide receiver, tight end, name it, offensive line. If you can keep a really good player who has a chance to contribute, particularly on a regular basis, You got to find a way to do it. But how much are you going to risk cutting a backup player at another position who may well indeed end up being a starter for the bulk of the season if the worst happens?
Yeah.
It's a hard line to draw, but they've been – this is a problem. This is the problem that is for every NFL team at this time of year.
I mean, I know people like Blackshear a lot. Steve's gone round and round on this, explaining that these kinds of running backs are readily available across the National Football League. You're going to see probably about a dozen of them cut between now and Tuesday at 4 o'clock. I like Blackshear. He's got some juice to offer, but I think he's probably on the practice squad for this roster. If someone on the team picks him up, more power to him. But I think he's a practice squad player for the Bills. Dom on Football is next, and he asks, interested in the fourth edge position between AJ and Shaq. Bean has shown in the past to be willing to trade before the final cuts for draft capital. Could the odd man out be traded? I don't think there's any question an odd man out could be traded, but let me just tell you how the pecking order is going right now at defensive end, because AJ is not in the fourth defensive end discussion. He's the third defensive end, because it's basically Von Miller, Greg Rousseau, and then AJ Epenesa is the next guy on the field. And it's been that way for the better part of the first two preseason games, and nobody has played to a degree where I would say it would change that pecking order. Boogie Basham comes on next, and then it's Shaq Lawson after that. So Shaq is in competition with Boogie Basham, if you want to know the true one-for-one competition there. And Steve, we've talked about this already.
Right.
It's a question as to whether or not they're going to keep five defensive tackles and four defensive ends, or four defensive tackles and five defensive ends. And that's going to determine how safe Shaq is on or off the roster.
They may keep 10, they may keep 5-5, and then try and sneak somebody at another position over, put them on the 53, and then get them to the practice squad as a veteran reserve and protect them every week. That's possible. But when push comes to shove and the regular season starts, 10 guys at that spot, that's hard.
Yeah, even
particularly
with the rotation,
if none of them are playing any of the coverage teams or return teams.
Right.
So they may try and do it in the first 24 hours, but it won't stay that way.
What about the trade option there? I think it's very hard to trade this late in the game, because most NFL clubs know if you're willing to trade somebody, that means you're probably cutting them anyway if you can't orchestrate a trade. I think you'd have to find the right team desperate to fill that positional hole that doesn't want to deal with fighting 30 other teams to get the guy.
Right. That's the thing. And it might come down to this, Brownie. You mean, you look at the guys on the roster, you know, Epenesa is still on a rookie contract. Shaq Lawson isn't. Epenesa and Boogie Basham, the two rookie contracts, those are valuable because of the economics of it. So while you won't get much benefit from releasing those guys, you may get some quality draft capital in return for some cheap labor for another team of a guy who can really play. Shaq Lawson's been around the block. He was available for anybody to sign this last offseason. The Bills signed him, so his contract's not going to be a huge number.
No, he's making the
but
veteran
at this
minimum.
Point, right. So at this point, you know, what are you getting with him? So that the rookie contracts for guys who might be able to play may bring back more in return for the Bills because they're better players and cheaper. That's where you start getting into what are you willing to part with in order to get something substantial back. Because you're right, Brian, there'll be 31 other teams that'll pick up the phone. But if you're going to release one of those guys anyway, they'll just wait. And they may be willing, particularly some of the teams that we're talking about, the teams with a lot of cap space, they may just be willing to say, yeah, we'll pay the guy more than you're paying him now anyway. Just cut it.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Bean has done an extraordinary job in moving players. I mean, after the last preseason game in 2018, he traded A.J. McCarron for a fifth-round pick. So it's not like he hasn't done it late in the preseason before. Quarterback might be a little bit different animal than some of these other positions that we have discussed. You know what I do wonder? I wonder if Brandon Bean gets on the phone with Joe Shane, knowing how barren their tight end position is, and says, hey, you want to flip me a seven for one of these tight ends? And maybe that goes down. I don't know if Joe Shane bites on that, because he's got to believe, again, as I stated earlier, they know they can't keep four tight ends. How likely is it that they keep four tight ends? I think it's pretty unlikely, right?
Yeah, not with Reggie Gilliam on the roster.
Right.
He gives them too much as an H-back and a big body that can, you know, can do this versatile athlete.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those – I don't think they do. I think the real wrench in the works – and we'll talk about this on the broadcast tonight a little bit – is I think Quentin Morris is the real wrench in the works there. He's played so well.
Right.
So well, to me. Certainly he's got some work to do in the run game, that kind of thing, but no more so than a guy like O.J. Howard or Tommy Sweeney. And the fact that he is trending up, and I don't think they have seen – the limit of his potential yet. So that to me causes a problem. You don't just plug in OJ Howard, Dawson Knox, Tommy Sweeney and roll, because Quentin Morris is a guy that can play, I think, and can play a lot of snaps maybe. So then what do you do? Economically, OJ Howard's a problem. Tommy Sweeney, you've got a lot of effort and years invested in him as well. But anybody you cut is going to be playing in the NFL for somebody else in 3 days.
Probably. And most likely in New York if it's a tight end.
Yeah.
Provided they got the right order in the waiver claim.
Yeah, and that's fine. And who cares? That's fine. Even for Bills fans, they're great, good guys, great players, but they're in another conference and you can't keep them. So just let them go and don't give it a second thought. They're great guys. You treated them well. They're going to have fond memories of their time in Buffalo. But if they can't, if you're better without them than with them, I'm sorry, if you're better with them than without them, what are you doing? Don't give it a second thought.
Well, I don't even know.
And move on.
Yeah, I don't even know if it comes down to that. I just, as we heard Brandon Bean say the other day, and even Coach McDermott addressed this, a lot of times it's not that they don't want to keep that player in the fold. It's just numbers. They don't have the space on the roster to keep them.
That's all it is. And here's the thing, too. Being better off might be a financial decision. It gives you more cap space. If they're a coin flip different right now, take the cheap one.
Right.
It's that simple. And it's that cut and dried. And if you think that financial benefit is better, because even if the financial benefit is outweighed by the potential of a guy like Quentin Morris, as opposed to a guy you know everything about in Tommy Sweeney or OJ Howard, take a roll of the dice on the potential and keep the more expensive one, if that's what it is.
Yeah.
I doubt that that's what it is, but it would be, because the more expensive one would be Quentin Morris, because you take a cap hit releasing an OJ Howard or a Tommy Sweeney maybe.
All right, break time for us. Steve and I got to close this thing up when we return as we get ready for Bills-Panthers, 7 o'clock tonight. We're back in a second here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Steve, very quickly, because this caught my eye and I think it's worth talking about, the amount of weight that has been put on Mac Jones' shoulders from reports out of New England, including from NFL Network's Mike Giardi, is called considerable by people inside the organization. Training camp's been rocky, as we know, but the team and the coaching staff is putting strong belief that Mac Jones has turned a corner in his development. The same source that Mike Giardi cites, however, says if they can't protect him, and as we know, that's been a problem in camp, and they've talked about trading Isaiah Wynn, their left tackle, it's going to mute the whole thing. Doesn't this sound very similar to all of the stuff they used to put on Tom Brady's shoulders because they believed he could handle it and Brady proved that he could? It looks like they're taking the same approach in their belief in Mac Jones. I just don't think the team around him is nearly as good as that one was.
You're going to have a hard time convincing me Mac Jones is Tom Brady.
Well, that's the biggest problem of this whole bet that they're apparently placing. but they don't even have a good enough a team around them.
That math doesn't compute. So if that's what they're thinking, bless their heart. I just think at some point this season, we're going to go down and read some things in the reports about the Patriots, and you are going to have a laughing fit.
Have a good broadcast, Steve. We'll see you on Monday.